Paper 22, section 5. That's old single column, page 247. All right, remember we're doing the Trinity Sons of God. We got through that first group. Do you remember what that first group of three, what the group label was, the group name? The group of three. Trinitized
Sons of God.
No. Well, that's all of them. Trinitized Sons of Attainment. Yep, there we go. So we did the Trinitized Sons of Attainment. Next up, as you can see in the first line there, is the Trinitized Sons of Selection. Right. Now, remember when we, at the beginning of this paper, when we had those three different blocks. So we'll get through the second and the selection ones, and then we'll get on to the third block next time. We've got that great big, times a little complex section about Trinitization tonight, too. So put on your thinking caps. First of all, though, we have these two groups of these two different types of the Trinitized Sons of Selection. So let's just get into them here.
Section 5, the Trinitized Custodians. The Trinitized Custodians are Trinitized Sons of Selection. Not only do your races and other mortals of survival value traverse Havona, attain paradise, and sometimes find themselves destined to super-universe service with the stationary Sons of the Trinity, but your faithful seraphic guardians and your equally faithful Midway associates may also become candidates for the same Trinity recognition and superb personality destiny. Trinitized custodians are ascendant seraphim and translated Midway creatures who have passed through Havona and have attained paradise in the core of the finality. Subsequently, they are embraced by the Paradise Trinity and are assigned to the service of the Ancients of Days.
Okay, so first of all, just make sure we're squaring all the facts there. So remember, we've got some beings that are getting selected, and they haven't done the mortal phenomenon of attaining through the Ascension career directly the Isle of Paradise, but they've gotten to the Isle of Paradise through Havona. It has to be through Havona, by other means. Obviously they have ascended. They've been let go of their more horizontally functioning career, and then have worked their way up. But it's a select group, not all seraphim. It's not all Midway creatures. And now you notice here, when you're talking about the seraphim, you're very much talking about those that are serving as a pair of guardian angels, working their way up with an ascender. And those angels, plus any other angels that, for whatever reason, have been called up to the central universe, the first thing they do is go to Seraphington. Remember about that, how they have a task to complete, a modification, an upstepping of their nature to complete on Seraphington. From there, some of the guardian angels go back and work their way through Havona. Not all the guardian angels. Some guardian seraphim will go directly from there to Paradise and wait to meet up with the mortal on the other side. They don't explain why there is all this difference, but there's all kinds of different paths. But we're really looking at those guardian angels. So they graduate from Seraphington, and then they go to the seventh circle of Havona, work their way through Havona, and get to Paradise, and then join up with the mortal that they've been paralleling. And then the Midwayers, remember permanent citizens, quote-unquote, on a mortal sphere until light and life, normally, until the sphere gets to light and life. And then they're modified and become ascenders and work their way up the ascension scheme and can do this process going through Havona and getting to paradise. And the midwayers are all destined for a mortal finality core, or for a finality core, but not necessarily mortal finality core. Excuse me about that. And so, but the secondary midwayers do all go into the mortal one. So, you know, you can imagine that might be, you know, one of the primary aspects of what's going on here is the secondary midwayers. But you could have primary midwayers that are a lot more like an angel going through the process, and, you know, and we have angels here, too. So that's, you know, that's what's going on, and you'll see they'll explain a little bit more about exactly why these two groups get selected here as we go forward.
The candidates for the Trinity embrace from among the ascendant seraphim are accorded this recognition because of their valiant cooperation with some ascendant mortal who attained the core of the finality and was subsequently trinitized. My own seraphic guardian of the mortal career went through with me, was later trinitized, and now is attached to the Universa government as a trinitized custodian. And so with the midway creatures, many are translated and achieve paradise, and along with the seraphim, and for the same reasons, are Trinity embraced and commissioned as custodians in the super universes.
Okay, so first of all, like I said, here they're explaining it. You have that statement, valiant cooperation with some ascendant mortal who attained the core of the finality. And then they're saying, for the same reasons with the midway creatures. So, you know, in other words, in basically ways that are not talked about in any great degree, think of these ascending midwayers coming into very close association with ascendant mortals. You know, not unlike, obviously, the way the guardian angel pair are very close associates of ascending mortals, of an ascending mortal, a particular pair. So the two of them end up having an equivalent universe career of a very close paralleling and working with cooperation, as they say, working with ascending mortals, and finding themselves there in the mortal core of the finality. So like I was saying, see, the secondary midwayers are certainly going to be, because they're all going into the mortal core, but some of the primaries might also, and also go into some of the other finality cores. But you can see the key is the mortal here. This why are these seraphim or midwayers getting selected? It's keyed to the mortal. You know, an ascendant mortal who attained the core of the finality and was subsequently trinitized. So the very fact that the mortal that the seraphim or midwayer has been closely associated with gets snatched out of the core by the Paradise Trinity, so do these very closely associated, and now you see they must be really closely associated. I mean, they're basically considered a set by the Paradise Trinity in its totality attitude perspective of this, it grabs the mortal and, you know, the associate at the same time. Okay, but it's definitely, see, this group, the Trinitized Custodians, are definitely tied to the mortal core of the finality and then getting snatched out by the Paradise Trinity. Like I mentioned, seraphim and midwares could end up in other finality cores, but that's not what's in, you know, play here with the trinitization. Okay, now the other thing that you, you know, maybe, you know, we've seen this enough that it may not have given you pause, but when the mighty messenger, you know, that's writing this says, my own seraphic guardian of the mortal career went through, you know, well, wait a minute, isn't there a pair? Why is it? Remember, this is very common that they refer to the pair in singular fashion. And here, all the more reason. And let's go to the end of paper 113 and just remind ourselves. That's page 1249 in the old single column. Let me just read that very last paragraph of that paper. And let's remind ourselves what has transpired, for instance, with this one time ascending mortal, became a mighty messenger, with his pair of guardian angels, what's transpired for them as they first went to Seraphington before they went through Havona. Is everyone there at that very last paragraph? Let me just read that. Only destiny guardians are mustered into the primary or mortal core of the finality. So just, you know, see, there's the tie again. You know, you could have other seraphim there going into other finality cores, but again, see, we're just focused on the mortal core, so yeah, that's definitely what we're talking about here. And such pairs have engaged in the supreme adventure of identity at oneness. The two beings have achieved spiritual biunification on Seraphington prior to their reception into the finality core. In this experience, the two angelic natures, so complemental in all universe functions, achieve ultimate spirit two-in-oneness, repercussing in a new capacity for the reception of and fusion with a non-adjuster fragment of the Paradise Father. I mean, to get into a finality core, you got to fuse with the Father fragment. And so do some of your loving seraphic associates in time also become your finality associates in eternity, children of the Supreme and perfected sons of the Paradise Father. You notice the end of reference to mother and father there, you know, and children for mother and sons for father, like they always do. Okay, so not only do some of them get to finality core, but as we're just reading, they also get simultaneously snatched out by the Paradise Trinity if their ascending mortal does. And so you can see this two-in-oneness, even more reason that, you know, to have some truth content by using that singular designation, like the mighty messenger does, of just saying my own seraphic guardian, singular, okay? Because they've been linked together in a very special way. This process that the revelation, as we'll see later on tonight, it refers to as biunification. And not only that, but spiritual biunification. You don't want to miss that spiritual adjective there. So what's going on? Like they said, you know, normally you have a pair of seraphim, and they say they're so complemental in all universe functions. Remember, there you have a positive angel and a negative angel, or aggressive angel and a retiring angel. Or let's think about it in the way we so often talk about the difference between male and female, that basic pattern, you know, even the difference between the father and the mother. In terms of deity, you have one that's more direction-like and one that's more place-like. Now, you know, they purposely don't, you know, use male-female. They use that positive-negative for the polarity between the two, so that there you can remind yourself that there's a difference. It's not just another name for male and female when you're talking about angels or Marantia Companions or something. Okay, but it's you have a spectrum. In many ways, the material sons and daughters are very definitively separated into a very distinct direction-like expression and a very distinct place-like expression, and they're very, very dependent on each other for having two eyes, basically, to see things. And then there's a whole spectrum that is like that pattern in various degrees. Okay, and so here you have with this spiritual biunification. You remember how when we talk about spirit, mind, matter, and you talk about the hierarchy, and spirit directing the mind, okay? Spiritual direction. At that spiritual level of their nature, you're making them two in one. Almost like they're sharing that spiritual ceiling above their mindal nature. They don't have separate ceilings anymore. You have this twofold unification that's occurred. And so you now have a conjoint direction. They don't really have a separate directionality anymore. They're conjointly directed, like they're joined at the hips. Very, you know. Only here, they're joined on top. They're joined at this at the level of the mind is reaching up to, that spiritual level. They're joined together there. A lot like when we talk about, and the other way around with identical twins, because of the initial identical material nature, so the mind that's seated on that identical genetic nature is the same and then slowly separates because of the personality differential over time. You know, so there you have a common material foundation that the mind is seated on that makes, you know, that tends to initially give the mind a, you know, maybe not so much a direction, but a temperament, you know, that's identical. So this is just the other end of the mind spectrum. We have the spirit end having this equality. And so when you say it that way, see, in other words, the more place-like angel, the retiring angel, has been modified to so that they're both, you know, equal direction-like. You know, and when they're, like when we talk about that, they're going, if these graduates from Seraphington, for instance, don't do what we're talking about, getting involved in Trinitized Sons. What if they become Master Seraphim on a planet, those graduates of Seraphington? And we talk about how they're doing a much more father-like sort of ministry there. See, a much more direction-like ministry. You know, even though there's a parent, it's like, well, wouldn't there... No, see, they've both been made more direction-like. You know, and in this case, we actually are calling Trinitized Sons. You were calling them sons. We're indicating that relationship to father-likeness. So that's what's going on. You're eliminating that differential that used to be that polarity called positive-negative. You've short-circuited that. But how have you done that? You haven't short-circuited it in a finite way, you know, literally like... You know, like you short circuit an electric circuit, finite short circuiting, engaging finite circuit. What does it say here? What was that? Well, there's that. Yeah, but see, they achieve ultimate spirit two in oneness. Ultimate. So you've taken it up a notch. You've brought them into relationship with something that's transcendent of the finite differential. That ceiling, you know, sort of lifted their ceiling up to a level where that's above the finite differential, and so they no longer are subject to that finite polarity. Okay? So all those words are very key. See, to notice, so you have a very, on the very high end of their nature, you have an ultimate personality activity, you might say, sort of a super consciousness, that that has locked them together into this conjoint direction. And so they're obviously going to be really working in pairs now, you know, and not in the old way, because they needed that polarity to lock onto some energy grid or something. This is just because they're two in one. They're joined spiritually by this transcendent modification of their nature. Okay, so keep those details in mind. You'll see it comes up when we get to the Trinitization section here in a little bit. All right. Okay, so you've got, you now see that when you're talking about a mighty messenger or one high in authority or one without name and number, you get three for the price of one. You're always going to have not only that mortal, but there's going to be a pair of seraphim, too, that are going to be brought into the Trinity embrace.
Could you do a quick, just a quickie on what a non-adjuster fragment looks like?
Well, you know what an adjuster fragment looks like, right? The questions I get asked. just remember, there's lots and lots of different types of father fragments. The type of father fragment that fuses with our type is called an adjuster. You know, sometimes it's just called in the generic sense a father fragment. There's other father fragments, you know, that they don't call adjusters because they don't go into mortals to be thought adjusters of mortals. They're still father fragments. Okay. So you have all these different father fragments, all these different ways that the Father can fragment his deity nature and bestow it. And, you know, do any of us have any idea the details of what we're talking about? No. But they're very clear that they're not interchangeable. A non-adjuster fragment can't fuse with you. And an adjuster fragment can't fuse with a lot of these other beings. An adjuster can fuse with, an adjuster type fragment can fuse with a secondary midware, and does. That's how they have gotten into this mortal finality core. Now, what thing do you know about a secondary midware that makes it seem like, well, maybe that seems reasonable? A secondary midware uses some of the adjutants. You remember that? What two?
6 and 7.
Yeah. Right. See, so they have a relationship with that, lower domain of mind that's akin to us. The adjuster, the father fragment, is going into the mind. See, so that's telling you something about what the distinction is here. A certain flavor of father fragment can match up with a certain type of self, and not with another type of self. So it has nothing to do with personality. It has to do with self, the energy, mindal energy self, that adjuster is coming into this intimate association within, remember. You know, not just, you know, near. Okay, so that's what's going on there. Let's see here. So, yeah, why don't we just get the rest of here.
The Trinitized custodians are embraced by the Paradise Trinity in groups of 70,000, and 1/7 of each group is assigned to a superuniverse. There are now in the service of Orvinton slightly over 10 million of these trusted and high custodians. They serve on Uversa and on the major and minor headquarters spheres. In their labors, they are assisted by a core of 70 billion Sakana.
Several.
Several billion.
Several billion.
Several billion Sakanafim and other able superuniverse personalities.
Okay. Let's pull out a couple things there. So first of all, you see the 70,000. Remember we focused on this. So turn back, tell me which of the three, is it Mighty Messenger, those high in authority, or those without name and number, that also had the 70,000 per batch. You want to see that real quick?
Those high in authority.
Yes, it's those high in authority. So these come in the same group sizes as those high in authority. However, if you look there in those high in authority, they say 70,000, but then they say, how many are in Orvinton? More than 10 billion. Okay, here you have what? Over 10 million. Okay, so same size trinitization groups, but a lot fewer of these than those high in authority. So obviously aren't at the same frequency of trinitization. Okay, just you don't know exactly what it all means, but just to notice these details of how these things are not, there's some all kinds of fascinating patterns here, how some things line up and other things don't. And in terms of 10 million, so here you had 10 billion. If you look in those without name and number, that was 100 million. So, this is only 10. So it's even more rarefied group than those without name and number. That's an important thing to notice. So this is a pretty select group, this trinitized, sons of selection. Very select group. Only 10 million of them in all of Orvinton. Okay. And then to notice the details. They proceed to tell you that there's several billion Sakonafim and other superuniverse personalities. I mean, if you just say, okay, so I have 10 million of these custodians, and they've got several billion assistants. Just a little quick math there, and it looks kind of suspicious that you may have a company. It does say there's other things besides Sakonafim, but who knows, maybe they're also angels. Remember how the angels have these definitive groupings. A company is 144 pairs, so 288 individuals. If I had 288 individuals for each of the 10 million, I'd have 2,880,000,000. What does it say? Several billion. Looks kind of suspicious that maybe it's like, remember where that company thing came in, where you had a company of assistants. Those lower circles, lower psychic circle groups of ascenders, you have a pair of seraphim, engaging, say, 500 mortals. But they're not doing that alone. They have a company of cherubim. They have 144 pairs of cherubim helping them with that. So there's a pattern that we've seen up there in that paper 113 we were just reading from, of seraphim having a company of helpers. Maybe you're seeing it back here again. So those guardian angels that started way down in a lowly level with a company of helpers, maybe they've come all the way up to the top and now have a company of higher helpers. Sakonafim and those like them. Probably unrevealed. That's the reason it says other able. They're probably unrevealed beings. More of the children of the infinite spirit that they don't reveal. Most of them aren't revealed, remember. Okay, so just notice these little patterns, how things are, even though they don't state it, it looks pretty suspicious. You have a parallel pattern. Everything has all these interesting synchronizations, high and low. It's something that your spiritual consciousness is not used to reflecting on. All of this micro pattern, organization, form. Allow your material consciousness to notice how much form they keep reminding us of. It's a very important part of the cosmos. If we're going to be part of the cosmos, we have to allow ourselves to come into sync with all of this precise form. that is everywhere, not just the spirit of the cosmos, and also the form of the cosmos. All right, last little bit. Now we're going to find out why they're called custodians here.
The Trinitized custodians start out their careers as custodians, and they continue as such in the affairs of the super governments. In a way, they are officers of their super universe governments, but they do not deal with individuals, as do the celestial guardians. The Trinitized custodians administer group affairs and foster collective projects. They are the custodians of records, plans, and institutions. They act as the trustees of undertakings, personality groups, ascendant projects, Marantia plans, universe projections, and innumerable other enterprises.
In other words, they're the custodians of form. Someone is carefully over-controlling, looking after form. And all these things that are going on, there is a function, but that function is always within a very precise form that has to be managed, mind-managed. You don't just manage the spirit of what you're doing. You also have to manage the form of what you're up to. And they're just trying to rattle off all kinds of different, form expressions to remind you in every way you can think of. No matter what you imagine yourself doing sometime in the remote future, there will be a form. Including things like universe projections. We've talked, when they use that word projection, what does that imply? What kind of if you think of something being projected, like a slide projector projecting onto a screen, something is coming to a focus at a distance.
Future plan.
When they use that word projection, is it upward or downward?
Upward.
No, it's downward. It always applies to something in the absonite being projected down into the finite, projecting a form down into the finite, and everything has to happen within that form as so projected, like a local universe. The master architects establish a form, and a creator son has to work within that form. He's not free to go outside of the boundaries of the form as they have projected. They're way above his pay grade, in understanding the big picture. And they say, this is the proper form. And he says, yes, sirs, and works very precisely within those boundary lines. Okay, so projections, plans, all these things, institutions you saw, anything you can think of, there's a form. Form is very important. And the only way that you can develop an appreciation and begin to see the spirit of form is with your material consciousness. You say, well, it's material consciousness. How could it see the spirit of anything? Well, what's at the top of and guiding your material consciousness? Your first cosmic intuition, your logical acumen, individuality block here. And that's one facet of what? The Holy Spirit. Okay. You're talking about all kinds of very high spiritual beings in charge of form. There is obviously a spirit to individuality consciousness, to form. Okay. And what we should begin to seek that. We should take delight in cultivating that now, beginning to see the spirit in form. Not just the spirit in unity. All right. Let's see, what else we have in there? They mentioned the celestial guardians. We'll get to those next time. That's in that other group that we haven't dealt with yet. And you might say, the Trinitized custodians start out their careers as custodians. Seems like kind of a duh sentence, but it's not. I mean, you know, we've seen that there's a lot of these groups of beings. They have some sort of a category label like this that aren't born into that state. They achieve it through some long process. I mean, obviously the seraphim didn't start out as Trinitized custodians. But even once they were made, once they were Trinitized, they didn't have some process that they went through. And then eventually they were complete enough to be a Trinitized custodian. They're complete to begin with. So they're another one of these types that the Trinity has really tied a bow on them right from the beginning, and they're ready to go. That's the point of that.
All through this section, I thought we'd be talking about our seraphic guides, our guardians. And they're talking about, you know, they're pulled out when we're Trinitized, here we go as sets. And then it comes down here and says, they do not deal with individuals. So I'm confused.
Once they're Trinitized custodians, they aren't following around the mighty messengers anymore. But they're still working closely. The mighty messengers working for the Ancients of Days. The Trinitized custodians are working for the Ancients of Days. They're still working side by side, but they're, you know, they've got a boss now. A collective boss, the Ancients of Days. Okay, so again, when the Trinity snatches them out, it doesn't matter if they're a seraphim, an evolutionary seraphim, or a mortal. The vertical part is over. You're now functioning more like the stationary sons of the Trinity.
They no longer accompany their mortal anywhere.
Not necessarily. They might be handling the form. And the mighty messenger is handling the function together on a project, but not necessarily. I mean, you can tell here, I mean, not even the mighty messenger's companion is with him on this mission here on Urantia to give us this paper. Between the lines is that pair of one-time guardian angels aren't with him either. Okay. But obviously, there could be times when they're working together. But, you know, that everything changes when you get to paradise. You know, the whole regime that you're trying to become familiarized with through the fifth epical revelation comes to an end. This is just about the ascension career. The ascension is over at that point. You've ascended. You're done ascending to the Father. You now have to penetrate the whole grand universe and achieve a relationship to the Supreme. And on one hand you could say there's an upwardness to that, but more immediately it's, you're going around rather than up. You've made it all the way to the top. There isn't anything above the Isle of Paradise. That's the top of everything.
Yep. Barbara wants to know, is the projection of form limited to potential, or does it include actual form?
You can see right here, when they say institutions, that's an actual form. Okay. So they're not just, custodians of records and plans, and where a plan you might kind of think of in more of a potential mode. But institutions, the actualization of something, someone oversees that form, makes sure that it stays well-formed. Everything has to be personality managed, remember. Nothing manages itself. Walls of institutions, quote-unquote, need to be tended to even on high, or they'll crumble. Yep.
Paragraph 22.5.3, when it talks about because of their valiant cooperation with some ascended mortal who attained the core of the canal.
Mm-hmm.
So would it be okay to use this, like the spirit of courage, which is valiant? But can you not use this for because when I was thinking about the other ones, the those without name and number,
mm-hmm.
They're qualified because of their superior spiritual minds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then this one would be the valiant, so that's mm-hmm. like courage. Mm-hmm. But where would the
well, when you think
even use this?
You can if you remember that in a seraphim, the mind of a seraphim, what's seven facets for us, seven adjutants, is all together in a single facet, but the essence of all seven are within it. There is an aspect of a seraphim's mind that is analogous to our separate spirit of courage. There is a spirit of courage within a seraphim's mind. It's just not separate. It's fundamentally connected to the other six facets, whereas we have to work on getting it connected with the other six. So they have a leg up on us, you know, in that regard. But remember, the easy way you can understand or appreciate that, when you leave this planet, you leave the adjutants behind, but you may still have, you may be a seven circler. You may have all kinds of work on the psychic circles to do yet. And one of the ways you can think of what's happening with the psychic circles is bringing those seven adjutants together into one. So if you still have to do that, in your Marantia mind, there still must be the equivalent of those seven things. They're just not so separated. But they, so instead of thinking, well, I got to bring these together, it's more like, well, my mind isn't very symmetrical. This single mind that I have is kind of oddball shaped, and I need to get the twists and, you know, and whatnot out of it and get it nice and round and symmetric, and that will bring the equivalent of those seven adjutants that are within it into harmony. Okay, so yeah, an angel can be courageous. Any being can be courageous. It depending on how high a being they are, it's a little less of a profound phenomenon. It's like, well, you know, they're made that way. For us, we have to really choose to be courageous in the face of our self that wants to be a coward. Okay. Now, if you don't have a self that wants to be a coward, courage isn't quite as transcendent a phenomenon. Okay. If your self is courageous, not just your personality, then you don't have to bring the two together.
He said they don't understand our fear. They relate to everything but our fear.
Yeah. See, and a main reason for that is, I mean, the seven adjutants are seated on fear. See, and they don't have that, those adjutants. So their mind is, you know, seated way above the level of fear. So they don't know that. All right. Okay, so that's the Trinitized Custodian. So they're definitely working on this aspect that we know the Revelators are often challenging us, that whole bit about form, and to not dismiss that, challenge that historical tendency to want to be one of those free thinkers, quote unquote. You know, those are people who are trying to liberate themselves from form, thinking that it puts them in bondage. No, it puts them in danger of the rebellion is what it does. If you throw away the forms, you want those forms. They keep you safe. A creator son knows that he can stay between the lines and he's fine. You know, it's pretty easy to know what the right thing to do is. It's on this side of the line. Don't go on the other side of the line.
Yeah. Are these beings connected to the master architects?
Not in any direct way, no. It's just, you know, indirectly, like they're saying. I mean, the architects can project things, and they take care of what's been projected, but they're not involved in, because remember, the architects are absentite beings, so they're way transcendent and mysterious of anyone in this book.
So when you're saying form, are you talking about form that a swirl of galaxies?
No, I'm talking more totally in general. Remember, Havona has an economy. It has, what do we call that? What does the economy mean? The laws of the house. Okay? There is a right way and only one way to do a certain thing in Havona. There's a form. You either do it in that exact specific formal way or you don't do it at all. You have to tune your eye to know how to do it. You may have the will to do something.
Procedures, but not a physical form of procedure.
It could be a physical form. It could be anything you can think. Thinking generally, the whole spectrum, anything that you could imagine calling form. That's what we're talking about. From something highly literal, like the particular shape that spiral nebulae take or whatever, to something much more abstract from our current perspective. But from a high perspective, there really isn't anything abstract. Everything is literal. You know, every mindal form is literal. Every spirit form is literal. I mean, they see law directly as boundaries, as lines. Or what has form. I mean, it's literal. I mean, you saw when we read up there about the biunification, remember, did you notice they said capacity? There's a form. Okay? The Holy Spirit ministry from the Creative Mother Spirit establishes a form in our mind. There is a domain that has boundaries. This is the temple. This isn't. And within the temple, things have a certain form. You can, in order to be right, you have to learn the form. It's like, well, I just want to be free to build anything in the temple. Well, the Father did give you that liberty, but if you don't build it the right way, you're headed toward iniquity. It's like, but I had all these good motives behind my... You know, what I'm building up there doesn't matter. If it doesn't conform with the cosmos, with the harmony of the cosmos is a form. It's a specific form. You have to learn the form. If you don't build the stuff in your temple to conform to the cosmos, it won't be upheld. And the more you will it, the more you move towards iniquity. Doesn't matter how good your motives were. Did Adam and Eve have good motives? Yes? They needed more than good motives. They needed to follow a form. There was a specific plan. Do this, stay within these lines. They're like, oh, that's so binding to my personal liberty. The God of liberty said we can go outside of the lines and it's okay. No,
men and angels.
It's instantly not okay. Okay. Simple example of a form.
You know what's interesting, too? First, I was trying to figure out why they use the value cooperation. And then, so I look upon them as like caretakers. And so they're the ones that are taking care of the records, plans, undertakings, personality groups. That's a very important thing to do. So that's why they had to be chosen from the courage, because it's probably they could have easily, like somebody like Lucifer, the Ascendant Projects, he went off to La La Land. But these guys are strong and...
And think about how detail-oriented they had to be to get you to paradise. Yeah. Okay, they have to pay attention to the details. They're trying to help you with the form thing because you're pretty clueless to begin with. So they're trying to help you with it. Right from the very beginning, they're helping you with form. And coincidentally, they get all the way top and they're put in charge of form. Okay? They've been working on it all their life. Pam needs lots of form to get to paradise. Chris needs lots of form to get to paradise. I don't know the way. I'd love if someone would say, turn left at a certain point instead of just, well, do whatever you want. It's like, it'd be nice to know which is the right way. Okay, so now let's get the other group here, the Trinitized Ambassadors.
The Trinitized Ambassadors. Trinitized Ambassadors are the second group of the Trinitized Sons of Selection, and like their associates, the Custodians, are recruited from two types of ascended creatures. Not all ascendant mortals are adjuster or father fused. Some are spirit fused. Some are sun fused. Certain of these spirit and sun fused mortals reach Havona and attain paradise. From among these paradise ascenders, candidates are selected for the Trinity embrace, and from time to time they are trinitized in classes of 7,000. They are then commissioned in the super universes as trinitized ambassadors of the Ancients of Days. Almost 500 million are registered on Uversa.
Okay, so let's think about all the details there, get our bearings a little bit. All right, so you may remember that normally a spirit-fused mortal stays within the local universe, that they have a spirit fragment of the mother of. Okay. Sun-fused mortal stays in the super universe. They have a spirit fragment of the reflective mother spirits. Yeah, so they're confined to the super universe. If they go outside, they come unplugged, unless they're modified in some way. Okay. However, occasionally they get called up. Like a spirit fuser can receive a message one day, we would like your presence up at Uversa. And so this spirit-fused mortal in Nebadonse gets modified so that it can leave the local universe in Nebadon, and up it goes to work with the Ancients of Days. Well, it can even go beyond that. They could get called up to Havona. They could even get called all the way up to Paradise. Same way with the sun-fusers. So you can have spirit and sun-fused mortals, some of them, that get selected and are, you know, they don't necessarily, they aren't ascending, but they're brought up and serve at a higher level and brought up and serve at that next higher level. So they can serve at all the levels up, including Paradise. You notice they don't mention any finality cores here. So this is different. We're just talking about these guys that end up making it all the way up to Paradise because they've gotten called up to service all the way up to Paradise. And then out of that group, the Trinity occasionally snatches some and makes them Trinitized ambassadors. All right. Let's see. What else did we have in there? I know there was something else. Let's see. I forgot what I... selected... Raise it. Oh, yeah. That's right. Okay, so then the numbers. Okay, they're Trinitizing classes of 7,000. Well, we just touched that. Who's that the same as?
Name and number.
Yeah. Those are name and number. We're in classes of 7,000. And if you flip back, like we just did, you know, okay, it was classes of 7,000, but there was, it said there were over 100 million of these sons commissioned in Orvintan, so those without name and number. Like, whoa, this is, the previous one was smaller number. This is a bigger number. I mean, this is almost almost 500 million in registered universe. So that's interesting. So this is a, you know, there's more of these than there are those without name and number, even though they're being trinitized in the same size class. You know, and getting into big numbers, okay, obviously most of these are spirit fusers, because there's just a tiny, tiny bit of a handful of sun fusers. So the lion's share of this big number, 500 million, are going to be spirit fusers that have been called up and called up and called up, and then have gotten trinitized. All right, so you can just deduce all that from just looking at the numbers.
They do call them ascendant creatures.
Right, they have ascended, but it's just, You know, it's not in the normal sense of, you know, working from the local universe headquarters up to the minor sector, up to the major sector. You know, they aren't doing that, you know. And they're obviously going to have some sort of a modified experience in Havona. They're not going to have the same, you know, go through the same steps that a mortal ascender does and stuff. But they, you know, they are one-time mortals, so they do have that in common. So maybe what they lack in commonality, you know, in paralleling the mortal ascension career, like the two previous groups, you know, were really closely paralleling. What they lack in that, you know, close parallel, they make up in the fact that they're mortals to begin with. Yeah. And so they ends up being some sort of equivalency here, that you have these two groups, ambassadors and custodians. All right, what else do they, so what do they do here?
Trinitized ambassadors are selected for the Trinity embrace upon the advices of their Havona teachers. They represent the superior minds of their respective groups and are, therefore, best qualified to assist the super universe rulers in understanding and in administering the interests of those worlds from which the spirit-fused mortals hail. The sun-fused ambassadors are of great assistance in our dealings with problems involving the sun-fused order of personality.
Problems?
Yeah.
Right, I mean, you know, every differential between two types of beings is a problem that has to be harmonized. You know, don't think of it in simplistic, you know, anthropomorphic sense. But, you know, there's a differential that needs to be harmonized. Nothing self-harmonizes. The sun fusers are this very tiny little group of oddballs that have to be coordinated into the whole. They're a very strange little group. You know, very mysterious in many ways.
Probably take umbrage with that.
Okay, so the selection process. See, again, like I said, they don't have this tight parallel working, you know, as associates of ascenders like the other ones. That was one of their prerequisites. Here it's just a matter of when they're serving in Havona, the teachers there, the Havona teachers, notice, this is one that's destined for the hands of the Trinity. And why would the Havona teachers be really sensitive to that? Whose domain is Havona?
Trinity.
The Paradise Trinities. Right. That's the floor upon which everyone stands there. They know it very well, what the Trinity's about. Okay, so that's how they get selected. So you can see why the finaliter corps isn't really entering in. It's not about following the mortals and getting into the finaliter corps and getting snatched out with them. It's about the Savona experience.
You know, this is challenging my preconception of what the Maranchi experience is. I always kind of assumed by the time we all finish the Maranchi experience, we'll be pretty much mindily and intellectually alive. You know, the rough edges will be smooth.
You haven't even seen difference yet. Remember, you don't even know what the word difference means until you get to Havona.
You can't lose your individuality.
Wait till you see how problematic it is to come into a relationship with someone from another super universe. It's nothing but problems. And it's problems that transcend the nature of your super universe. In order to resolve that problem, you have to transcend the two super universes that two of you come from. You have to reach some level of that's above the differential of those two super universes. Two super universes are nothing but problems when they're juxtaposed. Everything is different. So, that's your first step when you get to Havona, is acquiring a nature that can bridge a difference between super universes. Okay. So, preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and longstanding prejudices don't just have to do with what you had before you found the Arantia book. They have a lot to do with what you've been thinking for years with the Urantia book. You know, challenge yourself to, you know, put those in the same bin as all those things, you know, from before you, the Urantia book. You've got many preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and longstanding prejudices. You have many things that are something to do with wine. What is that called? New wine and old wineskins, right? Right, old wineskins. You know, those old wineskins don't come into play until you actually have the new wine, the revelation. You know, it's only then that you can establish those new preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and longstanding prejudices. Because once you have the revelation, those could be the most problematic to know that you have, the most difficult to get over with, you know, to transcend. You're going to want to absolutize everything, all of your relationship to the revelation, even more than you had a tendency to absolutize the stuff before the revelation. Okay. All right. Let's get some more here. I forgot. There was one other thing. Just about to bring it up and had a question there. One just little side note. Best qualified to assist the super universe rulers in understanding and administrating the interests of those worlds from which the spirit-fused mortals hail. That's of local concern. Why? The non-breathers are spirit-fusers. So, you think, well, we're just off in remote space here. Trinitized ambassadors, what the heck does that have to do with anything about me? No, the Trinitized ambassadors are helping the Ancients of Days with our solar system. Because very likely, right.
Very local.
Right, very local issue. These guys are probably hanging around this neck of the woods a lot.
Malmaisia.
Okay. All right, let's get some more here.
Trinitized ambassadors are the emissaries of the Ancients of Days for any and all purposes to any and all worlds or universes within the super universe of their assignment. They render particular and important services on the headquarters of the minor sectors, and they perform the numberless miscellaneous assignments of a super universe. They are the emergency or reserve corps of the Trinitized Sons of the supergovernments, and they are therefore available for a great range of duties. They engage in thousands upon thousands of undertakings and superuniverse affairs, which it is impossible to portray to human minds, since there is nothing transpiring on Urantia that is in any way analogous to these activities.
Okay, so a couple things there. Now we kind of see why there's so many of them in relative terms. They're doing all kinds of different jobs, and there's lots of all kinds of different jobs to do. Plus, they're the reserve corps. Okay, so, you're getting to this. It's like, okay, so this is just the also included group. You know, the mighty messengers are on top, and now we're down to the dregs of the Trinitized ambassadors. No, I mean, these guys are on equal par, okay? They're the reserve corps for this whole group, okay? They could be doing lots of activities. And that also, remember, they do have that experience that goes all the way to the bottom as mortals. So they have shades of even what a mighty messenger or those high in authority or those without name and number bring to bear on a problem. So they can, you know, and they have shades of horizontal functioning like seraphim and midwayers did for a long time. Because, you know, long before they got called up, they were probably working for ages and ages and ages. They might have, you know, made it quite a ways along towards, a core of completion or something like that before they got called up. You know, so they could have a lot of horizontal experience. You see, so they have a little bit of both. All right, and that last little bit. Just notice carefully what the word is. Transpiring on your rancho that is in any way analogous to these activities. It doesn't say homologous, the same. It says analogous, similar. We don't even have anything similar, let alone the same. Just let that sink in. Okay, so that's how, you know, how far removed most of the universe is from our experiences yet. We just have no clue about what the universe is really about yet. There isn't even anything that they can use as a remote, vague, fuzzy analogy in what we know about.
Too much distortion of meaning.
Okay. All right. All right, so now let's get into the meat of it here, the technique of trinitization.
Section 7, technique of trinitization. I cannot fully unfold to the material mind the experience of the supreme creative performance of perfect and perfected spiritual beings, the act of trinitization. The techniques of trinitization are among the secrets of Vicegerrington and Solitarrington, and are revealable to and understandable by none save those who have passed through these unique experiences. Therefore, it is beyond the possibility of any being successfully to portray to the human mind the nature and purpose, purport of this extraordinary transaction.
So in other words, everything you're going about to read is going to be an unsuccessful portrayal. The more distortion of meaning is going to be highly in play. But, you know, why is he saying that right up front? He's saying, I told you, put on your thinking caps. Challenge yourself to try to not make it, you know, as hopelessly distorted as it, you know, might be. Doesn't have to be to the nth degree distorted, but, you know, it's going to be pretty fuzzy. But because we've talked a lot about deity and such matters, we can, you know, we can think about this with a little bit of clarity. You're going to get nowhere trying to do the seven absolutes of infinity or some monotheistic anthropomorphic God notion or something like that. That's not going to get you anywhere. Okay, that's going to get you nothing but down the wrong track. But with a little deity perspective, you can begin to get a little bit of a sense of what's going on. And just notice right up front, the trinitization that we're really going to be focusing on here is not so much the deities trinitizing, but finaliter, paradise of owners, that whole creature trinitized sons. That's what's coming after this. So that's the reason why, you know, this section is here. It's to preface creature trinitized sons so that you understand trinitization. All right.
Aside from the deities, only paradise of owner personalities and certain members of each of the finaliter corps engage.
Cores. See, that's all the different finaliter cores.
Cores. Engage in trinitization. Under specialized conditions of paradise perfection, these superb beings may embark upon the unique adventure of concept identity, and they are many times successful in the production of a new being, a creature trinitized son.
Concept identity. Taking a concept out of the inner life and actualizing it in the outer life as a literal being that a personality is going to identify with. You're going to bring an identity, a personalizable self, into existence. An identity. Okay? Predicated on a conjoint concept in two beings' minds, two beings' inner lives. So inner life to outer life, you're going to begin to bridge that gap. And you can only begin to do that once you've made it to paradise.
Which is presumably a whole lot more predictable in its outcome than the roll of the dice of just creature reproduction on a physical level, because you don't never know what you're going to get there.
Right. That this. I mean, yes and no. The fact that it's trinitization means that there is a kinship to procreation, the variability that you're speaking about, you know, pointing to in procreation is in the hands of the Supreme, whose personal spiritual nature comes from the Trinity. Okay, that's that, you know, that same mysterious phenomenon of a distillation out of the whole, you know, into the production of a self is in play. However, there is this very definitive thing that you might be thinking of. I mean, you have this, you know, as we're out to read, you have this very definitive conjoint concept, you know, that is being expressed. So it's not, you know, we just like to, you know, to do this thing, and who knows what the heck we're going to express. No, I mean, everyone knows exactly what's going to get expressed. Okay, so the flavor of self has a pre-understood character. However, there are mysteries in it, nonetheless, of exactly how this happens, how this coalesces, how my inner life, along with someone else's, becomes an outer life fact. You know, there is the mystery of the Trinity and the Mother, you know, the whole there in play.
It could take 33 years.
It could take an age.
Well, there's an idea too. Thinking of the Midwayers, how it took the staff 33 years of fooling around with, but they're trying to bring about this
the
non-physical liaison.
The Midwayers are, you know, another one of the, you know, Midwayers are not like angels. Angels are this thing that's coming down from the existential. Midwayers just coalesce out of the whole.
But the out of the Supreme, and I thought you were making that
comparison. Yeah, right, yeah. See, so there's a similarity here, yes. Yeah. All right. Is there something over here?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, it's interesting that they put this after discussion of Trinitized custodians, Trinitized ambassadors. And they talk in specifically about the intellectual selection of the Trinitized ambassadors. And, you know, we had discussion in the last paragraph of the custodians. And you're talking about form. That's very true. But you're also, I think, talking about discernment. So when these beings have gone through Havona, it's not necessarily a paint-by-numbers kind of task.
Mm-hmm.
It's a discernment of what works and what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get to paradise, what does you have the capacity to discern perfection, but perfection can take many different forms within the overall limits that you that are imposed on perfection.
Right.
So why would you want to have a being of great intellectual and creative capacity if it was simply paint by numbers? Well, I don't think it is. I think it is an element of discernment and creativity.
Right. I mean, you don't misunderstand when I talk about form. We're not talking about paint by numbers. That's not what form means. See, and that's the problem. Spiritual consciousness thinks of form as paint by numbers. It thinks of it as a dichotomy. That's the challenge I was speaking of, that the revelation is putting forward, to develop a new relationship with form so it doesn't equate to paint by numbers in your mind. The key is that you have a personality, you have creativity, but that creativity is meant to have a boundary associated with it. And that's a very, very important thing to remember, because that's what Lucifer was challenging. You know? He was saying, I don't want my creativity to be limited by a boundary. What you discover, though, when you get above such simplistic thought like Lucifer had, is that you have more creativity within the forms of God than you do outside of the forms of God. The forms of God are the means by which your full creativity can be manifested.
I think with spiritually attuned people. A very common prayer is, show me what to do. And sometimes the answer is, figure it out. That's what you're supposed to do sometimes. Figure it out. And it's more important sometimes to do something than to contemplate, what should I do? And as you mature, as you progress, your capacity to discern the right way, the successful way, the optimal way, matures as you try to do it.
Just, you know, when you talk about discernment, you know, there's two modes. There's the wisdom that you were just speaking to, where you learn by leaping. You know, and if you are have a higher consciousness, you'll wisdom will eventuate from that. But you can also learn by looking. The direct discernment that comes from the Holy Spirit. See, again, that's form. You know, it's a recognition of form that's internal. You can just see what's the best way. Or you could go through a long process and eventually come to the recognition that that's the best way, more experientially. So, you know, it's a matter of, you know, how much, what's that balance between sort of an existential discernment and a more experiential one. But it all ends up being discernment, you know, wisdom, insight, and foresight, all three, you know, will give you the full ability. All right, let's see, where were we? Was it just the second paragraph, or where were we? We read the second already? Okay. All
right. The glorified creatures who engage in such adventures of trinitization may participate in only one such experience, whereas with the paradise deities there seems to be no limit to the continued enactment of trinitization episodes. Deity seems to be limited in just one respect. There can be only one original and infinite spirit, only one infinite executive of the unified will of the Father,
United.
Son.
United will of the Father, Son. Okay. Okay, so just real quickly here. What did they just bring in there? It seems like we were just going to talk about creature trinitization here. They're bringing in the pattern on high. They're saying that when we originally think about the three persons. We have the universal Father and the eternal Son, and the two come together, and you have the third person. We were thinking about it in a very creator-like mode in the seven absolutes of infinity, you know, sort of picture, where we had the universal creator, and, you know, and that companion creator, that we either, you know, some in the full mode, we call him the coordinate creator, okay? You know, or just the co-creator, if it's in a more limited sense that we're thinking about that companion creator. But we have those two creators making a conjoint creator, a conjoint expression. Well, we talked about conjoint expression with the biunification a little bit ago, remember? Making a conjoint expression, that conjoint actor, that creator aspect of the third source and center. See, all in the very creator mode. And even if you bring in the controller side with the universal Father related to the Isle of Paradise, making the infinite spirit, okay, the controller side, and to go with the creator side, the conjoint actor. But here they're bringing in something more. They're saying this also has something to do with trinitization. Why? Well, that third source and center has another aspect. It's the infinite mother spirit. Where does the mother part come from? And we know about the conjoint actor, the absolute mind. We know about the infinite spirit. But what about the mother part? Where does the mother part of the infinite mother spirit? That can only come from the Trinity. Can't come from the Father and the Son. That's to come from the Trinity. So how does that work? The Father and Son together not only have, you know, a sort of a forward expression, like we always talk about with the seven absolute of infinity, but what's immediately behind the Father? The Trinity. the other side of the universal one of infinity. See? So from the Son through the Father and through and then through the Trinity can come a parallel expression. You know, they create overtly this way, and there's a reaction through the Trinity that brings in the mother part. There's a trinitization aspect to bringing the third source and center into existence. It's not just a... So it's both creation and trinitization together to get the full third source and center into existence. Okay? That, and so they're saying, you know how we're always focusing on the creator part. Forget about that part. Think about the part that you never think about. Think about the trinitization part of that act, of that phenomenon. And it's not so much an act, it's a functioning of the Paradise Trinity in relationship to the act of the two creators. It functions and Mother Deity comes into existence. Okay. But it has this, up front, we can see this conjoint phenomenon. So the part that you can see is this conjoint expression, and then the part you can't see is the trinitization. So again, like I said, I mean, it's all sort of not really visible, this trinitization part, and that's why it's so mysterious, except to those who've experienced it. Okay, it's not the overt thing like what we call creation. It's this coordinate phenomenon called trinitization. All right, so that's what they wanted you to think about, that as sort of the high source of the pattern that we're going to be talking about. The two creatures are going to express a similar pattern, only instead of being able to do lots of trinitization, it is very much like that, where there's only one trinitization tied to the third source and center, and there's going to be only one trinitization that can be tied to a pair of finality or paradise of owners. Okay.
Well, I'm thinking it has to do with the superadditive consequence to the way we will, if we trinitize, it'll be two things coming together in the superadditive consequence that finds harmony with the Trinity in some way.
Yeah, it's just, and that's kind of, all we're saying is there's two different kinds of superadditive consequences. One that you call creation. I mean, the conjoint creator is a superadditive consequence in that overt creation mode.
So when the deities...
The other way, too.
When the deities trinitize, except for the infinite spirit, it must be a higher level being projected down rather than... So there's no limit.
Well,
because it's got the infinite.
I mean, it goes up to the top, but then comes back down. I mean, from the Trinity, it can go all the way down to the finite, because the Trinity has the Trinity of absoluteness, the Trinity of ultimacy, the Trinity of supremacy. Remember, the Trinity functions all the way down the hierarchy. So, you know, yeah, from the Son to the Father, it goes all the way up to the top, but then it can come back down again, however low it needs to express, because the Trinity, you know, has this, spans the whole vertical extent.
But when they're made, then they get a personality from
the Father. God. Yeah.
And this is a new thought, though, a concept that's never been thought of. So God has not thought of this. Is that the way it is?
Let's see. Does that sound right?
All right. But maybe he's waiting for it to be.
Now, remember, the Father doesn't see any of these temporal phenomena we're talking about. He views everything in eternity. I mean, his only point of view is what he sees in eternity. Everything that ever will be from a time perspective is already there in eternity.
So somebody just thought of this and then...
I mean, we're just, you know, if you want to think about it, I mean, there is a being in eternity. And if you start at the eternity viewpoint and look down, what we're, you know, you're seeing as far down as that being projects, It projects down to this point where it doesn't project, say, all the way down to a mortal world. It just projects down to paradise and the activity of these beings that have come up to meet that lowest point of that it extends down. So you have, you know, it's like you coming up and meeting your adjuster that can only reach down to the supreme level. I mean, that's what the way the Father, you know, Father just sees everything in eternity. Father has no relationship to this temporal activity and stuff. I mean, is it something the Father hasn't thought of? The answer is, well, of course he's thought of it, because all personalities were individuated before time began. Well, more technically, outside of time. His individuation of personalities was done before there was time, because he sees, from our perspective, the end from the beginning. He knows what beings need personalities, because all the beings that ever will be are in front of him in eternity. See, again, you have to challenge. I mean, there is no, you know, the Father has no temporal perspective on this. Those personalities, every personality that will ever be needed is already in existence, waiting for a self to identify with. So from our temporal perspective, we bring this self into existence, and then a personality identifies with it, not because it got bestowed, it's because it's been waiting there forever, literally. From past eternity, it's been waiting for that self that it's supposed to identify with.
He takes note where you were born.
Yeah.
He takes note where you were born.
Right. I mean, and see.
The question assumes that you're outside of the Father. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
The ascendant adjuster-fused mortal phenaliters who have attained certain levels of paradise culture and spiritual development are among those who can essay to trinitize a creature being. Mortal phenaliter companies, when stationed on paradise, are granted a recess every millennium of Havona time. There are seven different ways such finaliters may elect to spend this duty-free period, and one of these is in association with some fellow finaliter or some Paradise Havona personality to attempt the enactment of creature trinitization.
Okay. Every millennium of Havona time is 100 million years, remember. So every 100 million years, you get a recess. Okay, so you've got this, you know, you can see that it's not something you can do automatically. The ascended adjuster-fused mortal finalers who have attained certain levels of paradise culture. So this is somewhere down the process. And what that process is why they use the word essay, which literally means do out. Okay? Remember how I said that what you're going to do here is you're going to take something that's in the inner life and you're going to actualize it in the outer life. You're going to do it out there. You're not just going to do it in here. Essay. That's why they use the word essay. Okay? And what you're doing is you have, when you, in order to be able to get on to become a resident on the Isle of Paradise, you have to have the ability to have a direct relationship with the supreme experiential level in the outer life. And you can go far enough down that process of having a relationship to the supreme experiential level in the outer life that you could maybe achieve this act. Okay. You can have the beginnings of a relationship to the supreme experiential in the inner life very early stage. I mean, fusing with your thought adjuster. Okay, you only do that if you have a direct relationship with the supreme experiential level in the inner life. Now, you're a long ways away from being a resident on paradise when you fuse. Okay, to be able to take that inner life, you know, relationship to the supreme experiential level and begin to manifest it, you know, or or do it. Let's just say it that way, like the essay to do. Do it in the outer life, to essay it. Okay, that's what we're talking about. Bringing it literally into the outer life. Okay.
If two mortal finaliters, on going before the architects of the master universe, demonstrate that they have independently chosen an identical concept for trinitization, the architects are empowered, on their own discretion, to promulgate mandates permitting these glorified mortal ascenders to extend their recess and to remove themselves for a time to the trinitizing sector of the Paradise Citizens. At the end of this assigned retreat, if they report that they have singly and jointly elected to make the paradisiacal effort to spiritualize, idealize, and actualize a selected and original concept which has not theretofore been trinitized, then does Master Spirit number 7 issue orders authorizing such an extraordinary undertaking.
Okay, so we note that the transcendental beings, the architects, are involved. And why Master Spirit number 7?
It's the presiding
master. It's the Master Spirit that has the most relationship to
the
Paradise Trinity. All right. Okay.
Unbelievably, long periods of time are sometimes consumed in these adventures. An age seems to pass before these faithful and determined one-time mortals, and sometimes Paradise Havona personalities, finally achieve their goal, really succeed in bringing their chosen concept of universal truth into actual being. And not always do these devoted couples meet with success. Many times they fail, and that through no discoverable error on their part. Candidates for trinitization who thus fail are admitted to a special group of finaliters who are designated as beings who have made the supreme effort and sustained the supreme disappointment. When the Paradise deities unite to trinitize, they always succeed. But not so with a homogeneous group pair of creatures, the attempted union of two members of the same order of being.
Okay. See, supreme effort and sustained the supreme disappointment in the outer life. See, you actually, think about this as, this is the first time that you're attempting such a supreme effort in the outer life and can be disappointed there. Long ago you would have attempted things in the inner life, supreme efforts, and failed, been disappointed. But this is the first time you're trying to essay it, to do it out there.
So this wasn't a failure of concept. They have an original concept because the Master Spirit knew that it was.
Well, the key is right at the very end, a homogeneous pair. Like, just think about it literally. What obviously was making this so difficult? There's not a lot of differential between a homogeneous pair.
Right.
And the differential is what powers everything. There wasn't enough voltage across the poles of the battery to make it happen. Too close to neutral.
But that seems odd because they have to have the same concept. Start with, or are they...
But see, again, you're thinking that, well, if I can think it, it is. No. That's a thought that God has. We have physics we have to deal with. There's physics. To bring something from the inner life to the outer life, you have to have voltage. Okay? And if the appropriate voltage is not there, it doesn't happen. It doesn't matter how much you want it to happen, it will not manifest in the outer life because you don't have enough power to project like that.
So 100 million years, they're out there trying to create the voltage?
Well, no, that's not. The 100 million years is, I mean, well, you're working for 100 million years and you get a little break. Who knows how long the break is?
Yeah, but, unbelievable
but,
length.
But it says an age, so, you know. But, of course, you're on paradise, so time. What's time? You know,
I'm just trying to imagine these two people trying to generate voltage. You could just go wild with that concept, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, that's the key word, homogeneous.
Right, I mean, you got to think about this. There's literal physics they're trying to tell you. It's the technique of trinitization. It's a physics going on here. You're trying to somehow have enough voltage between the two of you to tap into the whole of the Trinity and have this flow from it through you to that. Okay.
What do you do all the time?
See, so there's, you know, this just it's this literal, you know, and that fact, you'll see, is very important. Your spiritual consciousness doesn't, you know, take into account the form. There's a form to this. And there's no getting around it. Doesn't matter how much you want it. 100 million years of wishful thinking will get you nothing. Okay? A lot of Urantia mortals need to learn that lesson. That it's irrelevant how much wishful thinking it is, how sincere you are, blah, blah, blah. Okay? There's a physics. You have to figure out how to turn an ideal into an idea. If you can't do that, doesn't matter how much wishful thinking you have, nothing's going to happen. Doesn't matter how pure your ideal is, how vast your ideal is, if you can't turn it into an idea, it's not going to happen.
This concept remains unexpressed. So that means it could still be trinitized.
Right, by another
higher voltage pair.
Yeah. It obviously wasn't the correct pair. They saw the potential, but they weren't the means to that end. And that's disappointing for them. It's like, I thought we were the means to that end. It was so clear.
Supremely disappointing.
Yeah, same way for an idealist on this planet. You may see the end, but you may not be the means to that end. Don't think that because you can see it, you must be the means to the end.
You could be part of the elite group that didn't make it.
Whatever.
And then?
Okay. Just notice the truths that are here for us. This isn't all just abstract stuff about beings on paradise. Just trying to teach us stuff about here. Okay.
If you fail at this, you don't get a second chance to ever try trinitizing again.
Supreme.
You had one, you know, yeah.
You're kind of tired. You're in disappointment rehab for a while.
Don't worry, there's an eternity of potentials in place. Other groovy things can happen down the road. All right.
When a new and original being is trinitized by the gods, the divine parents are in deity potential unchanged. But when exalted creature beings enact such a creative episode, one of the contracting and participating individuals undergoes a unique personality modification. The two ancestors of a creature trinitized son become in a certain sense spiritually as one. We believe that this status of bi-unification of certain spiritual phases of personality will probably prevail until such time as the Supreme Being shall have attained full and completed manifestation of personality in the grand universe.
Okay, so there it is again. See, that spiritual bi-unification, it's the exact same thing that we talked about before, only now it's with a pair of you know, paradise of owners or a pair of finaliters, mortal finaliters. And notice how they word it. See, one of the contracting and participating individuals undergoes a unique personality modification.
Yeah.
Right, so you have some kind of direction-like place, like polarity, see, is what they're telling you. No matter who these beings are, that's the voltage we're talking about. You have a polarity here, and the more place-like one is going to bi-unify, and they're gonna have a conjoint direction afterwards. You're going to short-circuit that differential, so you can't ever do it again. You know, if you do it, that's, you can only do it once. Because, you know, you no longer have that differential. that polarity to power it anymore.
How do you know it's the place life one that changes?
Just because it's you see, it's the same parallel we talked about before, the evolution. Like the whole aspect of from a finite, from a time experience of the finite, we see this place-like personality presence, but that is, and that's coming from the Trinity, but that's going to coalesce and become a direction-like expression. That's just the evolution. So it's the same pattern, because it's the same Trinity is behind it. The Trinity is always doing this. That place-likeness is a focalizer. Remember, it's not just a presencer. See, it's a focalizer. It's bringing place to a focus so that it can be directed. That's the evolutionary process. That's the whole evolutionary process of place becoming direction. And once all the place has become direction, then all the directions are put into a bigger place. And it just goes on and on and on forever. There's always place. Place never goes away. Mother is always there. It's just that the lower expressions of mother coalesce. Yeah. You know, but it's an infinite thing, so you never get to the end. You're never going to use up mother.
When you say direction, do you mean purpose?
I purposely say that so this is it's appropriately abstract. Just like in when you're talking about spirit directing mind, okay, your personality patterns, purposes, spirit, and that spirit and direct mind. So there's a purposing direction parallel or closeness there. But again, all forms. We all know why that guys don't like to stop and ask for directions. Why? Because they think they're in the embodiment of direction. Without even, they've never even heard Chris say place direction. That every man since time began just knows that, or thinks that. Okay? I mean, it's just the way we're designed. We're designed to think direction-like and place-like. And it can be something as literal as asking for directions. I mean, as literal as that, what direction do I go? It's like, I don't have to ask directions. I'm the embodiment of direction. If I don't know direction, then who does? It's just an assumption. Now, of course, it's obviously fallacious because they're absolutizing their little finite directional sense. Okay, but
Don doesn't have a clue about direction. Hmm. But men focus.
But
men are very focused. If they're sitting at a computer, that's the only thing that exists. Hmm. They don't see that the things are burning on the stove.
Right, that's direction.
It's just they're so focused. They aim at things. They sit in a tree and aim at something for days.
Which sex is known for saying it seemed like a good idea at the time? Women or men? Men. Why? Because, they have this directional thought, but they don't stop to look at the place where they are.
They don't see the
place. It's like, it might be an appropriate direction, but not there. But they don't notice it because they don't have enough place-like sense. They haven't taken delight in cultivating, having a more place-like sense. So they don't go, oops, seemed like a good idea at the time. That's just that bias to direction. Now, remember, the whole point is for a man to cultivate place-like consciousness and a woman to cultivate direction-like consciousness. And neither of them should be absolutizing either of those. They certainly shouldn't be absolutizing. They're trivial little tiny nuggets that they're given with by birth. And that's the big problem that usually happens. You take this minuscule little initial temperament that you have and you absolutize it, and say, if a man doesn't think like that, he's wrong. Well, it's like, if you think like that, you're wrong. I mean, you're thinking that your tiny little nugget is the absolute. No, there's seven absolutes and you're not one of them. Okay? You know, and in the same way for men. I mean, don't, you know, I shouldn't have to repeat it. I mean, obviously it's true for men too.
But Chris, you know, it's always we're really good at place and we're really good at direction.
And the extent, and Eve thought she was really good at direction.
But the man,
didn't work so well. Right? Men and women need to work with each other. If there's a true relationship, the existence of the female will help the man develop place-likeness, and the existence of the man will help the female develop direction-likeness. Now, obviously, both of them have spectrums. There's very place-like men and very direction-like females. That's not true of material sons and daughters. There are no direction-like Eves. There are no place-like Adams. They're pure direction and pure place, and they're completely lost without the other. They're totally dependent upon the other. You know, and they try to remind you that. Remember, Eve, you have no directional consciousness. Do not do anything without coordinating with Adam. He's your other eye, you know, and vice versa. Yeah. And it's obviously more problematic if you try to go in a direction, if you don't think about the place, than just sitting in place. It's not so, you know, that's why women don't go, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time. I mean, because just staying in place doesn't lead to, you know, broken bones. But direction without relation to place leads to all kinds of problems.
Well, I agree with Sydney. I think the default. There's a lot more of both things in a lot of people than that strict dichotomy.
Yeah, what did I just say? Men and women don't have a strict dichotomy. Material sons and daughters do. But just remember, men and women have shades of that. Don't assume that you don't. You'll live to regret it.
Women will have much less of a... They won't ask the question, where will this idea take us? They will immediately start thinking, how can we take this idea and make it work? Make it work. Fit how to coordinate it within the place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than a man will say, "Well, if we follow this course of action, where will it take us?"
Yeah.
Women don't tend to ask that question.
But again, it's not universal. Some women ask that question. Some men don't. See, again, don't. You can't absolutize this.
I mean,
don't think in dichotomies. But if you don't first separate, you'll never understand. You know, if I don't separate this into all these boxes, I'll never understand the cosmos. If my initial thought is, well, you know, there's meaning and value really are kind of the same thing. If you look at it, you know, if you start with that unity consciousness, you'll never get anywhere. You know, if you start with the assumption that men and women are equal, then that's the end of the road. You can't get anywhere. You have to start with a recognition that they were made by God, separated. And then you can recognize that material sons and daughters are made as two delta functions, two spikes that are separated. And men and males and females, mortals, are made as two normal distributions, two bell curves, and the two bell curves overlap in the middle. But they're, you know, they're way far apart, like material sons and daughters on the other sides of the bell curves. There are some men, women that are very much like Adam and Eve, hopelessly dependent upon the other perspective. They will always be walking around with one eye closed, but, you know, unless they take delight in cultivating a true relationship so that they can have vision together. All right, we're probably going to have to do the rest of this section next time, I think, here. Let's see, where would be a good place to stop this? Maybe, let's see, well, which paragraph are we on? Did we just do win anew?
No,
simultaneously.
We just did simultaneously? Okay, so we'll do one more paragraph there then. Let's see, what did we have in there? Let's see. Okay, I had to remember all the things. Oh, yeah, it's just, okay, so yeah, we were talking about the bi-unification. Just notice all the parallels. Ultimate, see, they become one on the ultimate functional level. See, it's just like we were understanding with the seraphim.
We didn't read that paragraph.
Didn't we?
No.
No.
No, that's the next
paragraph. Oh, okay. All right, I'm sorry. Okay. Okay, well, let's read it then before I talk about it. Okay.
Do we need it this week or next week?
This is a good place to break after these two paragraphs, and then we'll do the more complicated stuff at the end afterwards.
Simultaneously with the appearance of a new creature, Trinitai's son, there occurs this functional spiritual union of the two ancestors. The two trinitizing parents become one on the ultimate functional level. No created being in the universe can fully explain this amazing phenomenon. It is a near-divine experience when the Father and the Son united to eternalize the infinite spirit. Upon the accomplishment of their purpose, they immediately became as one and ever since have been one. And while the trinitization union of two creatures is on the order of the infinite scope of the perfect deity union of the universal Father and the eternal Son, the repercussions of creature trinitization are not eternal in nature. They will terminate upon the completed factualization of the experiential deities.
Okay, yeah, we definitely didn't read that yet. Okay, so like I said, so you have the ultimate functional level, and then notice this understanding that we so often bring in of the closeness of the Father-Son. They're explaining that here finally. We had to bring in Trinitization and the Trinity and Mother and all these elements in order to have a direct way to understand why it is that the Father, Son are Father and the Son are so spiritually one. You know, think about, you know, I go back and if you want to, and read some of those statements in the two Eternal Son papers, you may remember how many times they had this very definitive statement about, you know, if you want to see this spiritual fact of the Father, look to the Eternal Son because they're one. They're giving you a sense of how they got so bound together in a unity way, but they're still separate individuals. They have separate individuality, but the unity end is just two in oneness. And it's because Trinitization was involved in bringing the third source and center into existence. That's why. They're trying to give you a better sense of this, you know, the physics of this. Mm-hmm. That it's not just because they, they see themselves as on the same spiritual page or something like that. You know, it's not wishful thinking on their part. They had to actually get fused together via the Trinity. You remember how the Trinity, when you look at it from the top down, the Trinity's undivided deity? Or undividable deity. See, there is a, you know, what's separated out into the universal Father and the eternal Son can be brought back together again, if you will. If you think about it in a time sense, can be brought back together again by the fact of the Trinity, and it does. That's what, if you think about it, is this sequence like this? That's what really binds them spiritually together, is that Trinitization act. Okay, so that maybe will give you a new twist on thinking about that. Let's see. You notice that they don't qualify lessen it in any way. They say, and while the Trinitization union of two creatures is on the order of the infinite scope, pretty amazing thing. You're almost, it's like, wait a minute, did I miss the word? You know, it's not on the order? You know, it's like, no, it is on the order of the infinite scope, the Trinity is involved. Okay? It's a deep mystery here. The Trinity is actually involved, just like it was with the Father and the Son. Same Trinity. Same Trinitization.
Yeah, but then it goes on to say this shocking thing.
Okay, yeah. That's the most important part of the sentence, and that's what I'm going to get to here. So that last part is very, very important to understand, because it's one of the things that is very definitively a revelation in the fifth epical revelation that no one on the planet appreciates. Okay, the repercussions of creature trinitization are not eternal in nature. They will terminate upon the completed factualization of the experiential deities. You as a creature, me as a creature. Creatures cannot forever alter anything. Only creators can forever alter something. No one in this room can alter destiny. You cannot forever alter something. To think you can is to absolutize your nature beyond what it is. But this is very common that we think about, it's like, oh my goodness, like the Lucifer Rebellion. Well, that forever altered everything. No, that's impossible. He's a creature. He can't forever alter anything. Everything, I mean, and how can, so, well, how can that be? I mean, it's different than it would have been if he hadn't rebelled. How does that not go forward to eternity? No. You're getting confused by extrapolating your time viewpoint and absolutizing. You need to go to the eternity viewpoint, okay? Only creators can change what's in eternity. Okay? And creatures can't. So, that's the destiny point. It's fixed. It can't change because it's in the creator's hands. No creature can change it. So, I mean, either there is a co-absolute, or a co-absolute, I mean, excuse me, co-absolute being in eternity that we're currently calling Lucifer, or there isn't. Okay? No one can change that. He's either there or he isn't. Okay? It's just an issue of when you project it down into time, you know, if he isn't there, well, at some point in time, he won't be there anymore. If he is there, then there won't be some point in time when he will be as if he had never been born. See, and again, that be as if he'd never been born. I mean, they will terminate upon the completed factualization of the experiential deities. All of your finite things terminate. We transcend the finite. So, I mean, all finite space, time, every finite fact, everything, all that is transcended. If you can't forget something finite in time, guess what? You'll forget it even before that. If it's just a simple finite thing, it'll be gone when the grand universe is settled in light and life. The first of the experiential deities they're referring to there. Okay. All the finite things will be transcended, no matter what it is. That can't go. A finite thing can't go to eternity.
So I don't understand what you're saying. The trinitized being is not eternal. Is that what you're saying?
No. So what it's saying is, you make a creature trinitized son, and that has all kinds of finite consequences. It may even have some absentite consequences. That's why they said deities, experiential deities. But all of those repercussions go away. Like so that's what I'm saying. Think about Lucifer. Lucifer does this thing. It's like ringing a bell. So the whole of finite creation is reverberating with the repercussions And that's why that word, repercussions, reverberating, you know, with the repercussions of the Lucifer Rebellion. All of those repercussions will be damped out.
Chris,
by the time you get to Grand Universe Settled in Line Light.
It's not saying that the actual being that is trinitized disappears.
No.
It's just the deeds of it.
The repercussions of, you got to carefully read the sentence. Okay? Not the being, the repercussions. So all of the finite problems that are result from you making this being, because there are lots of finite problems. You're making a being that has some aspects that transcend the finite. And that leads to problems. But all those problems will go away. All the finite ones will go away when the grand universe is settled in light and life. All the absentite ones will go away when the master universe is settled in light and life. All those repercussions are not eternal in nature. There are no problems in eternity. So no matter how big a problem Lucifer makes, that problem can't get to eternity. There are no problems in eternity. No creature can forever alter anything.
Stays in the bubble.
Okay? And that doesn't, and the challenge is to not go to predestination. Okay? And I know, you know, it's getting late. We got to do this one last paragraph here, too. So I don't want to delay this too much longer. But we've talked about this before. The challenge is to, instead of staying in the time viewpoint and invoking predestination in order for that, what I just said, to be true, that's false. There is no predestination. There's eternity. You have to go to the eternity viewpoint. The creators function in eternity. Okay? They created a being or they didn't in eternity. And then we're experiencing the finite projection of the presence or absence of that being. You know, it comes from the top down, not from the bottom up. And that's insanely different than what anyone has ever thought. Okay. The closest they've gotten is predestination to resolving this. You know, but no, you have to take the eternity viewpoint. And you have to very definitively remind yourself of a problematic thought, thinking that you can forever alter something. You can't use that expression. That's a false expression. It's impossible for a creature to forever alter anything.
While these parents of creature trinitized sons become as one in their universe assignments, they continue to be reckoned as two personalities in the makeup and roll calls of the core of the finality. Or is that cores of the finality?
Yes, his core.
And the architects of the master universe. During the current universe age, all trinitization united parents are inseparable in assignment and function. Where one goes, the other goes. What one does, the other does. If parental biunification involves a mortal or other finaliter and a paradise of own personality, the united parental beings function neither with the paradisers, of owners, nor finaliters. Such mixed unions foregather in a special core made up of similar beings. And in all trinitization unions, mixed or otherwise, the parental beings are conscious of and can communicate with each other, and they can perform duties that neither could have previously discharged.
I see. So just like two twins are kind of linked mindily together from the bottom up, like I was saying, you see this linkage, mindal linkage together, because the top is the same. Okay. They are conscious of and can communicate with each other. And just notice again, where one goes, the other goes. What one does, the other does. They can perform duties that neither... See, this is a directional phenomenon. It's not where one stays, the other stays. So you have this very directional phenomenon now, this biunification, this common directionality. of these two fine islanders, or these two paradise of owners. All right, so there's a little bit left here that we'll and that's just fine because it actually works well for that list of the three different types to be a preface to actually getting into the creature Trinitai Sun. So this will work great for a place to stop here and pick up next time. Spend some time thinking about some of these things, though. These are, you know, I hope you see. I mean, I was trying to be very direct and challenging. I mean, that's the whole point of the revelation. It is trying to reveal something to us. We don't know what it's trying to say. The common wisdom of the planet is false. That's what it's trying to reveal to us. Common wisdom is that we forever alter things. Common wisdom is that we're born equal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's clouded all of our thinking because we can't help but be born amidst all these thoughts. The revelation is trying to directly take those on, those most cherished beliefs. Okay, it's not going to challenge your truth, but it is going to challenge your beliefs, especially beliefs that are parts of isms on the planet, and that people try to make a complete lifestyle solution. And we all know that every time, you know, that differential between men and women comes up, this is problematic. The revelation is, that's one of the things that it's really trying to take on, is to get us to think differently about ourselves as men and women. Because the way we've been thinking about ourselves is not helping. And it'll be even less helpful going forward. Out on the high seas, if we are at odds with each other while we're fighting, the ship sinks. We have to, you know, we have to begin to see ourselves as coordinate pairs, which means we have to appreciate why and how we're different. You know, it doesn't mean that it's paint by numbers. You know, you don't have one little square for men and one little square for women, like we were saying. But the centers of the bell curves are not co-located. They are separate. So there's that. And then one of the other really big things, just to leave you with, to reflect on, is some of these problematic thoughts that idealists have. It's not that idealism is bad. It just needs to be true. It needs to be spiritual. It can't be material. And it needs to have the help of the other eye. It needs the revelation. There's no way for any human to come to the recognition that they will terminate upon the completed factualization of the experiential deities. That is just completely out of the blue revelation. And it changes everything. It changes every assumption that spiritually minded people have right now. It's a revelation. Complete game changer. If you're interested in taking on the challenge of the revelation, you have to have the courage to just take a hold of every way you've thought about all these things and come to a very settled understanding and turn the whole card upside down, start over again. All right, let's take a moment here.